This is another one of our sessions on the laws of divine life, divine laws of life. This one's on the law of death and rebirth. Esoterically, they're considered the same. We've shuffled the question is, what is the divine law of death and rebirth, and how best can an aspirant harness it? Shuffled the cards, laid out the spread, and we have the following. The starting point is, are you ready for it? Death. A major, the 13th card in the major arcana, or number 4, which would seem to set the tone nicely for the law of death. The counterpoint is the 5 of cups, right side up. The challenge is the empress, right side up, is number 3 of the major arcana. The purpose is the page of swords upside down. The endowment is the fool, the zeroth, in the zero place of the major arcana, number 0 in the major arcana. It's right side up. The destiny is the ace of swords upside down. Then over to the pillar of revelation, we have the real question is justice, number 11 in the major arcana, at 2. The unseen forces, 6 of pentacles, upside down. The spiritual ideal is a chariot, another one from the major arcana, upside down, number 7 in the major arcana. And the culmination is the 5 of rods, upside down. So we have 5 cards in the major arcana, which implies how important this law is, even though there's not much we can do except grin and bear it. We can't use this. There are ways we can use it, but we'll talk about those more in 2 weeks when we do the companion law of the law of disintegration, which is a subset. And we'll be talking more about the creative uses of death and disintegration then. Right now, for the purpose of this reading and investigation into what is the divine law of death and rebirth and how can an aspirant best harness it, the answer is the aspirant needs to understand it. There's not a whole lot, there aren't too many times in life that we have the option to continue on or not. Always the best answer to that question is to continue on until the soul pulls the plug. So we want to understand that this is a universal activity, death and rebirth. And that's the context in which we're going to treat this. Nothing would advance human understanding more than to eliminate the fear of dying. And if you think that that's an overstatement, just look at Obamacare. There would be no Obamacare. There would be no hysteria about health care, except that the vast majority of human beings fear dying. And we know that this is reinforced every night on the nightly news, where the news largely consists of people dying, either in by design or not by design, usually not by design. If we were to take away this fear of dying and understand that life is a continuum and it appears from time to time in the physical plane, but that's not life. That's the outer appearance of life. And that life continues from one lifetime to the next as the soul, but at a higher level than that, at the level of the spirit or monad, there's no interruption whatsoever. The breath of God is a constant stream of energy that doesn't have any cyclic manifestation, except to the degree that it has created a soul that gives rise to personalities. And through that means, we're able to influence life in the physical plane. But there's nothing fearsome or troublesome about death or dying. The process is meant to be a smooth and gentle process. We complicate it by our doubts and our fears and our worries. And so the major point of understanding this law is that it is a divine law that influences all life forms that manifest, not just human life, but all life forms, plant, animal, mineral, vegetable, etc. But in addition, it also influences everything that takes form. And so, for example, the Spirit of America is a life entity, a living entity that seeks periodic manifestation through nations, as do other such entities. The logos of the planet seeks manifestation through planetary systems. These last a good deal longer than human life or human nations. It's kind of remarkable that the United States has lasted with a continuous form of Republican government for 224 some years. Very few nations have ever exhibited that much continuity. But there will come a time when, which may be sooner or maybe later, but there will come a time when the American experiment gets old and decrepit and must die, as is true of sequoias, and is as true as of mineral forms and plant life and mosquitoes and birds in the air and kitty cats and dogs and whatnot. So we have to understand that, or we need to understand that all finite forms eventually wear out their livingness and come to an end. That's what it means to be finite. They're not finite only in terms of physical dimensions, but finite in terms of the number of years that they can endure. And that's a good thing. DK would express it, really, the key to opportunity is death and rebirth. From one lifetime to the next, we get, for example, there would be nowhere, literally nowhere for people to go who, the youth who have been involved in all these horrific murders lately, the thrill kills. These are people who are poster children for death. Not that they give it or administer it, but there's no way they're going to reform from their murderous ways except by starting all over again in a fresh life with a better set of parents. And they may have to do a little suffering in the meantime to appreciate what they have done to themselves. But this is an expression of mercy. The very design of this law and the operation of this law is an example of God's mercy. This is where everything is forgiven. The slate is not wiped clean, but everything is forgiven. And we're given a fresh chance to start over again. So, yes.
That just brought up a question about this four foot killer.
Yes.
There's been a conversation about whether he seems to want to be put to death.
Well, he wants to be a martyr.
Right, right.
And I don't see any reason not to help him in that in that way.
Okay, well, I was just wondering about that.
Because there's no illusion greater than self-imposed martyrdom. And he may have a brief, fleeting impact on impressionable Islamic terrorists elsewhere, but I guarantee you, 1,000 years from now, nobody's going to remember the name of Major Nidal Hassan. And nobody's even going to remember what Islam was, because it's a dying religion. When you stop and think about it, I realize our schools have done a terrible job of teaching us this, but do you have any clue as to how many religions have come and gone in human history and are now dead, dead on arrival, dead on, dead in some cases awaiting burial? You know, very many people who worship Quetzalcoatl. He was the god of Mexico when Cortez arrived. You know, very many people who still worship Mazda. I know a few people, including ourselves, that own a Mazda. Mm-hmm. But Ahura Mazda was the all-powerful god in Persia. Mm-hmm.
Zoroaster,
exactly. Or as he's fondly known above the mean, Zeroaster. No, I just made that up. That's a joke. But there are all kinds of, I mean, if you've read the Joan Grant books from Egypt, you know that there have been, in Egypt there were religions that came and went and have disappeared from the face of the earth. And of course, we're not even going back and tapping the religions of Atlantis. And there are all different kinds of religions. We remember Judaism, but think of all the religions of the pre-Islamic Arab nation. Every little nomadic tribe had their own religion. And some of them are mentioned in the Bible. Most of them aren't. But these are forms that inspired people to good or bad things. But everything finite, every religion, every school of thought, every philosophy, every national system, every science, every art, eventually goes through the death experience and is no more. And isn't that good? I mean, of course it's good. I'm not asking the question, I'm stating that. It is good that this happens because, as I indicated a moment ago, there would be no opportunity for further growth in humanity if we were all still stuck in our beliefs and systems of 12,000 years ago. And in fact, we'd all be running around very Atlantean, very emotional and emotionally focused and not understanding how electric lights work. And well, we probably don't understand that anyway, but some of us do, more and more of us do. And we understand how important natural resources such as oil are and whatnot. Death is actually the force of opportunity. And in order to understand the nature of life, it's not even a question of what is life. It's not the physical body. It's what inhabits and animates the physical body. It's not necessary to know anything more than that, except that there is obviously something intelligent, loving, and wise, the higher self, that animates our physical personality. And that never dies. Life cannot die. As you remember from when I taught the Ten Commandments, the commandments are not really, they're really statements of truth, not admonitions not to do things. And so when the commandment is made, thou shalt not kill, it is basically saying you can't kill. There's nothing you can kill. You can kill the physical body and induce death in the physical form, but what have you done? Almost nothing. It's going to happen anyway. I mean, this is the way that these young punks who did the thrill kill in Oklahoma and other places should be treated. And when in their day in court, the judge should look at them and say, well, what do you think you've done? You've done nothing. you killed somebody who was going to die anyway sooner or later. Maybe you killed them a little prematurely, but you're just punks. You killed anything. You killed the spirit of humanity in yourself, not in this other person. This other person is someone who needed to work some things out, and you gave him the opportunity to do so. But you're not nearly as tough as you think you are. You've proven nothing. You've proven nothing except your own immaturity, your own adolescence, your own stupidity, your own naivete, your own lack of understanding of how life works. And that's the attitude that we have to take here, and the great liberating force of the divine law of death and rebirth, is that the physical form does die, but you lose nothing of importance if you consider your physical form to be that important. You don't lose your talents, you don't lose your mechanical skills, you don't lose anything except your illnesses, your weaknesses, your bad habits. These are things that you might lose, but you're gaining fresh opportunities when you're reborn. Now, again, let me emphasize that the mystery of death, the law of death and rebirth, as we are talking about with this opening card here, and it's upside down, the six upside down cards all refer to this as a divine force. The upright cards give us a clue as to what we're to do with it here in the physical plane. The purpose of death here is to renew. It's a renewal. It's a an opportunity to renew an activity. Renew. Sooner or later, we lose. There's no sense of loss, but this is a divine force that moves through life and is constantly working to liberate consciousness that has been trapped in form, and liberate it from the form so that it can resume its growth. And again, it's not a question of the personality or even the soul. It's a question of life is the monad. Life is spirit. And so there's no thought or question here, except on at the level of the whole of humanity. There's no tragedy ever involved in death and dying. The sun is coming up in the death card. It's not going down. It's the ascendancy of consciousness over form. And it can happen at any age, but it happens under the prudent judgment of the soul and larger forces than that. So, for example, the Spirit of America decides when it's going to end its association with this nation. It isn't something that we decide for it. We could make the nation undesirable, unattractive to the spirit, but that would be kind of like shooting ourselves in the foot. So we want to try to prolong it as long as possible, but it will not prolong it for sentimental reasons any more than is necessary. Okay. The important thing is to understand that all forms, not just some forms, but all forms experience death. And it's just a question of consciousness being withdrawn, the body being returned to its components, sources, dust and dust and all that. And then at a later time, the informing spirit will begin a new incarnation. And that's true whether we're talking about man or dog or cat or religion or any social force like an art school, etc. Okay, we then go on to the counterpoint, which is the Five of Cups. And the Five of Cups is a fellow standing with his back to us, looking out on the wild swamp. Three cups have been spilled. Two cups remain, probably full, maybe empty. We don't know. This is the counterpoint. This is a right side up card. So it's the way humanity responds to death. And unfortunately, it captures the fact that the vast majority of human beings not understanding this law of death and rebirth focus on a sense of loss. Or as I put it in this morning's ATM, woe. There's nothing in this world to justify that. It's an uninformed, ignorant reaction, but that's the way most people assume that when the cup is spilled and the life force runs out, that's death and that's the end of life as we know it. It's not at all. It's the beginning of a much better life, a life without the additional problems of physical health and sleep and feeding and caring and so on. So we have to get this firmly in mind. These first two cards teach us that life is not physical. Life is interior. Life is what animates the physical. And we need to understand that and integrate that into our thinking in order to understand the beauty and splendor of life here on earth. We then go on to the third card, the Empress. This is right side up. And this is another right side up card. So this is indicating to us it's our second major card. The fact that we have five majors indicates how important this is. Three of the four are right side up, so they deal with our response. The Empress is here in the valley, in the cavern, so to speak, bringing the divine force of enlightenment, as we see in our headdress, down in and translating it into fertility and nurturing. She's a symbol of the nurturing element of humanity. And of course, what is being nurtured is human growth. And humanity in turn is the paraclete, the agent that serves to nurture all of life on earth. And so our purpose when we're here is to enable growth to occur on earth. Most of our growth actually occurs at inner levels, the level of the mind and spirit. But we learn about life on earth and we learn about the cycles and the seasons and we discover how to play our part in redeeming life on earth and growing in consciousness. So this is our effort. Since this is an upright card, this indicates that one of our best ways of harnessing the energy of or the law of death and rebirth is indeed through the force of nurturing, learning to nurture growth on earth. This then brings us down to the purpose, the Page of Swords, an upside down card. And this is pretty obvious because this is a sword, the only sword in the, there are two swords, I'm sorry. Two swords, that and the Ace of Swords. I had that correct. Mm-hmm. But this one is the Page of Swords, the page representing learning. And through most of our human experience, most of our human lifetimes, we're learning to grow. We're learning to participate in this marvelous. And one way of understanding this is to think, I'm sure you don't remember your lifetimes in Atlantis, but imagine if you had not grown beyond the stage of Atlantean development. And for the last 12,000-15,000 years, you've just been stagnant. It's an incredibly shocking concept to think of. But that's what humanity's been doing for 15,000 years. We like to in our ignorance, cluck about how, well, if we're growing, I don't see any evidence of it. But if you were to challenge somebody and say, would you want to go back to being the way you were during Atlantis? If they understood what that meant, they would quickly say, no, no way, no way, Jose. Now, there are some people on the planet Earth today that are not as evolved as the advanced people were in Atlantis. That's because there's a constant mix of people on Earth. But in general, our reason for being down here in periodic life and taking form, creating personalities, is so that we learn how to act as part of humanity, a humanity that we can tangibly see and register and interact with. And we're learning our spiritual lessons. They may be very basic here, but we're learning them. That's the point of this. We go on to the endowment, and we have the Fool, number zero in the major arcana. And basically this is a statement that we're easily deceived by the physical plane. Anybody who believes that the physical life is what is a fool, is fooling themselves. They're kidding themselves. And it also suggests that we must never take the concept of physical life or physical lifetime all that seriously, because life is non-physical. Life comes in from within, as the card indicates here, the divine light flowing in right at the top of the card. All that we are in any lifetime is what we have been in the past and have brought with us through our talents, our skills, our maturity, and so on. Our goal is not survival, because the ultimate goal of life is death, the ultimate end of life. All life ends in death, all physical life. So our goal is not survival. Our goal is purity. You see that little flower the fool is holding and looking at. Everything else, that's the only real thing to the fool. Everything else is appearance. Everything else is immaterial, or literally material. But it's the material that's immaterial. So we're learning how to purify our presence on Earth and to achieve the perfect white rose or whatever flower that is, and make that the object of our contemplations and activities. Survival is not important. It never has been, never will be. Living to be 100 is no accomplishment. It's almost guaranteed that the last 5 to 10 years will be pretty much a burden on other people. Maybe longer than that. Living any specific length of time is no achievement. It's just a fact of life that might serve the purposes of the soul. But we have to understand that if we overstate the importance of physical life, we're the ones that are playing the fool. From that, we move on to the card of destiny. Having established the reality of consciousness, we move on, and we now are ready to say, well, okay, what is physical life for? And this is a pretty dramatic symbol where the sword is planted in the soil of the residue of ancient evil and mischief. And out of that soil, there are the two perfect flowers. Notice how the flower of the fool's contemplation of purity become the two flowers flanking either side of the sword. So there's a definite movement from the fool to the ace of swords, from the endowment to the destiny. And this is what we're here for, to find ways to work the earth, either literally in an agricultural sense, or mine the oil and the minerals and work as Burbank did, or work mentally. to find ways to redeem the ancient patterns of limitation that are on the earth. Keep in mind that the earth, without human intervention, would just be a lump of unredeemed matter. And that was the matter with earth in the first place, and why God needed a little help and asked for volunteers and sent us. We're in the perfect position to serve as an agent of light, going back to the Empress, her headdress is filled with inspiration, and she's able to translate that into fertility and growth and development. And that's what each one of us is individually and collectively trying to do. And the sword of spirit is thus implanted in the residue of ancient mischief. And we are in the process of redeeming and changing the unredeemed into perfect flowers, perfect fruits of our work. Okay, I'm going to pause here for a moment and entertain comments and questions before we go on to the pillar of revelation.
Carl,
yes.
How would you translate the triangle symbols on the fool as it relates to this reading? I just noticed around his neck and then on his side on the...
By the ear?
Left whole area. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those types of decorations appear frequently in the Aquarian Tarot, and I always interpret them as archetypal, signs of archetypal knowledge. That he's able to work, it's not obvious to most people, but he's able to work with archetypal knowledge while he's here in the physical plane. There are similar designs on the magician. There are similar designs on the lovers,
temperance,
yeah, and so on. And this is part of his achievement. This is part of his ability as a personality to gain access to archetypal levels of life. And he's inspired by them, which is what produces the redemption in the next card, the Ace of Swords. Does that help?
Yeah, you had said he's a fool if he, takes death too seriously, and I was thinking,
I didn't say he takes death too seriously. I'd say the average human being takes death too seriously, and therefore becomes a fool.
Okay.
But the average human being thinks that we're all fools because we don't take death seriously. Mm-hmm. In fact, we laugh at it. And because we know that it's just a stepping off point, keep in mind that in other tarot decks, the fool is stepping off the edge of the world. Well, it's a stepping off place to embark on the rest of our life experiences on earth and elsewhere. Okay, other comments or questions?
Thank you.
Sure.
I was just thinking that you connected to your email today of people getting down or depressed. In a sense, we are, I think, experiencing perhaps the death of some institutions that if we are patient enough, that it's a good thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Education, our government, the lack of self-reliance. I mean, they had on the news today Eric Holder still debating why some people have to have IDs to vote. I mean, all of this, it's a full period of history passing out, and these people are just resisting, holding on, for whatever their motivation is.
Sure.
There are people who are just fearful of the death of these things.
Are you accusing our Attorney General of holdering on?
Yes, holding on to his own motives, that's all.
Yeah. Well, that's absolutely right. We're in a transition phase here. I think that transition phase will go until about the year 2025, another 12 years or so, and then then we'll get a whole new wave of growth and whatever. But there's no question that in this period of time, the interval between the dominance of race 6 and the beginning of the Aquarian Age, as the Piscean Age and its influence washes away and is replaced with the Age of Aquarius, there's a lot of transition going on in this fashion, and there are a lot of things that have to be put to rest. We hope we're putting to rest things like terrorism and dependency and slavery. The question on slavery is, as I suggested in the blog today, the question on slavery is whether we've gone far enough that people don't voluntarily ask to be enslaved for security and comfort. That's the big key right now. If we have enough willpower to resist the Obamacare and say, hell no, we don't want it, then if we have that power, then the transition will go smoothly. Otherwise, there will be a whole new wave of slavery, and it will be self-inflicted slavery. Now, the fact is that freedom is open to anybody that wants to declare it and live their life that way. But this is the hardest thing for people to understand. You know, the symbol of Moses leading the Jews out of Egypt, where they were slaves, he didn't lead them straight to the promised land. He led them into 40 years of primitive life in the wilderness, in which time they did silly things like build the golden calf and worship it and stuff like that. The reason for the 40 years in the wilderness were they weren't ready to govern themselves, to lead their own society, to set themselves up. They had to go through the enslaved in Egypt process and then liberate themselves with the genius of Moses. And they still weren't ready. So they needed another 40 years of leavening in the wilderness before they could come and set up their own nation. And the text, the jury is not yet convened as to whether they pass that test or not, because they haven't done too well in setting up the promised land. Okay, so every nation, every tribe, tribalism itself is something that the idea of tribalism needs to be put to death so that we can go into the nationalist system of nationalism. And that's only been around a couple of hundred years. And then, and we're already seeing its limitations and trying to move away from that. So we're in the process of putting nationalism to death and develop more of a sense of global humanity. And like it or not, that's what's happening with our involvement in Iraq. And since our leader was so reluctant to continue on in Iraq, he now gets to be in Syria. There's cause and effect for you. Syria and Iraq were joined at the hip. They were the same political party. And that's obviously where Saddam moved his weapons of mass destruction when push came to shove over the border into Syria. So it's nothing but a little bit of karmic poetic justice for this president who got himself out of Iraq so quickly and nimbly without doing anything. Now
he gets himself out of everything lately,
right? Right. Now he's being drawn back in, inevitably, to the same region and the same situations, only worse. Okay, anything else before we move on? All right, well, let's go on to the pillar of revelation. We have justice, the six of pentacles, the chariot, and then the five of rods. And this is going to be interesting. The first two cards appear on the surface to be very similar. And in fact, the first three cards, in fact, all four cards here run very closely together. But justice is the balancing out of things. And this is what the law of birth and rebirth does for us. And we can intellectually understand this. It balances the scales. This is the principle of karma. The balances the scales between the inner and the outer. If you go around shooting people from Australia in the streets of Oklahoma, innocent joggers just running along, you're going to be given wonderful opportunities in future lifetimes to atone for this error in judgment. And so the law of death this is something that as I said earlier, what would these kids have to look forward to if this was the high point of their life, which it probably is, and is a good reason for execution of, in the case of murder and whatnot. You might as well let these people go, recycle them. We recycle trash. And that's one way to look at it. It's just a form of recycling our trash. And I'm not saying that critically or in a mean-spirited way. It's, they're the ones who have proven themselves to be trash. They desperately need this recycle. They need a new chance at life where they can hopefully do something a little bit better. Now, of course, between now and then, they'll probably have a number of life experiences in which they get shot and maltreated and have loved ones that are shot and stripped away from them. So they get a sense for the loss they've inflicted on others. But I think we can all be glad that we're not in their shoes. But this is the principle of justice, divine justice at work, always for the purpose of mercy, always to give them a fresh opportunity to redeem the ancient baggage of mischief and evil that they're dragging around with them. But on a larger scale here, then this is the real question, since this is the position of the real question, whatever is happening to you in your life, you should ask the question, what are the antecedents? What are the antecedents to American democracy? Well, some of those antecedents are what we've inherited from the English system. Some of our antecedents go all the way back to Rome and Greece, and dare I say, all the way back to Atlantis. Now, earlier systems of Republican government have tended to be very short-lived. History tells us that the Republic lasted only a very short while in Greece and not very long in Rome either. But they established principles that survived even when emperors took over and ruled authoritatively. There were certain rights and privileges that had been set up during the Republic that the people wouldn't tolerate losing. And so even then, the system may have died as a form, but the sense of freedom that was incurred, the freedom to think, the freedom to express yourself, lived on. So this principle of justice as it applies through death and rebirth is, what are the antecedents of what's going on now, and what will be the future results of what I'm contemplating doing now? Because we don't live in a vacuum. We live, everything that happens to us now has a past and will have a future. And I'm afraid that our friends in Oklahoma who decided to have a thrill kill weren't thinking of the future. If they were, it isn't a very thrilling future. So we have to understand that there is this principle which isn't very hard to grasp, but it does tie us to both the past, in some cases the very distant past, thousands and thousands of years, and to the future, what we are building toward. Then we come to the next card, the Unseen Forces. This is the Six of Pentacles. And the Six of Pentacles is an accountant with a scale, very much like the Goddess Justice in the previous card, only he's weighing out things on a monetary, physical level. So again, this is an upside down card. It teaches us, stands for the physical plane. It's the one pentacle in this spread, and it teaches us the value of our property. And the value is not very much because you can't take it with you. The greater value are those unseen forces like genius and talent and skill at the mental level that we've accumulated over lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And that's our true possessions, our true property. And so we need to see the role that this plays in balancing the past with the future. And it's also the key, working with the law of death and rebirth is also a key to understanding how to negate the barriers or the limitations of both time and space. One of the problems of physical life is that we have a physical body that is here in the physical world, and it occupies a certain amount of space. We're here, we're not in England now that springtime is long past. We're limited by both time and space. We have a certain amount of time. We are alive now and have to work with the opportunities of now. We can't bewail the fact of what happened to us 2,000 years ago or might happen to us 1,000 years from now. We are here, and as we understand the balance between the inner and the outer, we can learn to use the inner forces of life in consciousness to negate the limits of time and space. So both of these cards are dealing with balancing the inner and the outer, events with their consequences, etc. Then we get to the Chariot. This is the spiritual ideal. Now the Chariot's an interesting card. It also bespeaks of the movement of the momentum of the Chariot is caused by the burning of the ancient residue of mischief and evil in the furnace there in the heart, in the gut. But we also know from the lines at the top of the head that there's stagnation. So these three cards tell a story together. Justice, the Seven of Pentacles,
Six
of Pentacles, hard to read upside down, and the Chariot. And that is that both Justice and the Six of Pentacles move us toward balance. They balance the indiscretions and errors of the past with fresh opportunity. Give us new opportunity to outgrow the past. And that's good and healthy. But whenever there's balance and equilibrium, it tends toward the Chariot. The weakness of the Chariot is it could lead to stagnation. And so what this is saying in this spread very dynamically is that without death, we would all stagnate. We would stagnate terribly without death. It's death that keeps the wheels of the Chariot moving along, lifetime after lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And without that, our 15-year-old friends in Oklahoma who did the thrill kill would have no way of growing. They would have no way of learning from their mistakes. Without that, we would all be Lemurian in consciousness, focused in the physical plane. There would be no Atlantean consciousness. There would be no Aryan consciousness. There'd be no spiritual consciousness. So the chariot is the means of taking this pent up unredeemed energy and processing it and converting it into energy, forward momentum that breaks through the stagnation, gives us opportunity. And you know, in a very real sense, that's the way we as a people should be looking at something like oil. Oil is the result of eons and eons of compression of hydrocarbons, and now we can take it and we can burn it and create fuel and furnace and motor from city to city and have plastics and aspirin and all different kinds of things. And we're tapping a resource that is becoming the motive force. So this is moving us toward resolution. We don't stagnate. We break through our barriers. And it may take a whole bunch of lifetimes to do that because we're very stuck-in-the-mud types of beings. We get enamored with the physical body and make fools of ourselves. We go around trying to look like we're 19 when we're 69. And that's foolish. But the sooner or later we have a lifetime in which we put it all together and we grow and we break through those barriers. This leads us into the fulfillment, which is the Five of Rods, second five. It's the idea here is that with both of these five, the Five of Cups and the Five of Rods now, we're given half a loaf. And we're told to see what we can do to make that loaf complete. So we turn to other people and we learn to cooperate. And we learn to transmute forces of antagonism and competition into forces of cooperation and freedom and respect for one another. And we do this together. We tend to incarnate in groups. We tend to die in groups. There was an article I saw on FoxNews.com this morning. Some old couple, he was 90, she was 89. They were living in a retirement home somewhere, and they died on the same day within 11 hours of each other. And it was being hailed by their family as a act of God that they both went together. But yeah, it's just symbolic of the fact that we incarnate together, not just couples, but whole groups of people. We learn lessons, and then we humanity as a whole benefits from this. And the real dynamic here is there's a constant inflow and outflow of people in the human race, and that contributes to human progress. And we need to see the law of death and rebirth at the group level, that we respond to the demands of our ray type for innovation on Earth, not because we're not drawn into, there's this idea that's popular in so-called spiritual circles that we're drawn by our desire in the physical plane. That may be true at a beginning level, but after 500 or so incarnations, we're drawn by we want to make things better. And that's what this whole spread is about. Making things better, making things work on Earth, helping groups do work that individuals can't do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Learning our lessons individually and collectively, contributing that to the whole of humanity, and working to redeem life on Earth. And that's the story of death and rebirth. Okay, other comments and questions?
Carl.
Yes.
It's interesting that Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died on the same day.
Right. thousands of miles apart, or at least 1,000 miles, probably 1,500 miles apart. Jefferson in Monticello and Adams in Boston. And yes, they, and it was, what's interesting is it wasn't just the same day, it was the 50th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence.
That's right.
And so they had an assignment. They were on assignment from the Spirit of America, and by God, when their work was done,
we're out of here.
Yeah, they didn't always agree with each other, and of course, they ran against each other for president. But after they served their term as presidents, they struck up a correspondence and died excellent friends, which is what they were all along. And you're absolutely right. We tend to incarnate in groups and die in groups, even if we're not together. Other comments or questions on this? Anybody? Well, that's it for tonight, for this one. We'll do this again in a couple of weeks when we'll talk about the law of disintegration, which is getting down to the nitty-gritty elements of death. But that's it for tonight.